Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this, talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Spanning the nerd world and feeding your fandom, it's time for the Down and Nerdy Podcast. Here's your host, James Witham.
Prisons, missing persons, and visions of destiny. It's episode 453 of the Down and Nerdy Podcast. I'm James Witham. Yeah, there's a lot going on there, isn't there? That describes this week's show pretty well, actually, because Taylor Hanley is going to be joining me in a few minutes to talk about Mayor of Kingstown Season 2. That McCluskey family is maybe never more stressful for them than it is in this second season, which you can now watch on Paramount+. We'll get some inside info coming up on that. Also, Ryan Broussard, who plays Mike on Alert Missing Persons Unit from Fox, he's going to be joining me to talk about all the stuff that we've seen so far in these first three episodes and tease ahead to this coming week's upcoming episode as well. If you're an Adult Swim fan, I've also got the creators and the cast of YOLO Silver Destiny. That show returning midnight on January the 22nd on Adult Swim. So I've got Michael Cusack with me. Todd Manojlovich and Sarah Bishop are going to be joining me as well. A lot of great interviews on the show this week. And you know I'm going to talk about The Last of Us premiere, right? Going to do that with spoilers. The Mandalorian trailer is here. Got a couple more trailers to talk about as well. So super excited for everything coming up on this week's show. So I guess we better get started, right? Let's get Taylor Hanley in here to talk about Season 2 of Mayor of Kingstown. Let's do that next on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is David Fielding, Zordon from the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, and you're listening to Down and Nerdy Podcast.
The chaos has begun. Season 2 of Mayor of Kingstown is now streaming on Paramount+, and the first episode was bonkers, and it only gets crazier from there. So I thought it would be a good chance to catch up, get some insight on this season from one of the members of the McCluskey family. It's none other than Taylor Hanley, who plays Kyle McCluskey. Taylor, how you doing?
Hey, James. How you doing, bud?
Good, man. Good. Really digging this season of Mayor of Kingstown so far. Man, season one, though, was very personal at the start for both you, for both Kyle and Mike. Do you kind of feel like, though, the stakes even higher now this season?
Oh, absolutely. Especially with what everybody went through in season one. I was just breaking this down. You know, Kyle, he's going through the death of his older brother. He's going through the death of his partner. He's going through, you know, multiple shootings. And then he goes through the prison riot as a detective in the prison while the prisoners have the prison, while he's got a baby on the way. I mean, the mental strain on Kyle is just unfathomable. And then when we pick up in season two, we're 3 to 4 weeks out from the prison riot. And Kyle's on a boat in the middle of Lake Michigan trying to stop a drug deal that turns out to be a maple syrup deal gone wrong. I mean, you know, this guy can't win.
It's pretty wild, man. As a matter of fact, it's funny that you mentioned that because, you know, everybody wanted him to take that safer job, right? You know, get out of Kingstown, take that safer job. We kind of see a little bit of that in the first episode. Do you feel like there is a safer for him, though? Is that really even possible in his line of work?
This guy can't escape danger at all costs. You like... But I think at the same time, because what Kyle went through in the prison riot, he's really looking to redeem himself after his inaction during the prison riot. I think that there's a lot of pain and shame that he's dealing with because of how he behaved in the prison. I think that, you know, he caved. Let's be honest. He caved. And so now I think he's trying to redeem himself in his own eyes.
It's interesting because a lot of the talk in season one, and I mean, rightfully so, was about physical safety for everybody involved. Do you kind of feel like there's more of an emphasis this season as well on mental health and mental safety as well? Like you said, everybody is going through so much, and maybe Kyle more than anybody. So do you think like mental health, mental safety, a big part of this season?
Absolutely. And you also see it with Michael Beach's character in episode one, what he's going through, the PTSD he's suffering. And, you know, his character went through way more traumatic events than Kyle, essentially. So yeah, there is, especially between the relationship between Kyle and his wife Tracy, played by Munshi. She's really trying to advocate for him and get him to talk about it. But the last thing that Kyle wants to do is break the seal off of his trauma, because as soon as he does, he knows that he is going to be floored. So he's just running and gunning, like I say, just doing everything he can to escape that and not. And defer his trauma.
What is that balance for him, though? The balance of, like you said, trying to redeem himself from what happened with the prison riot, but also dealing with what happened in the prison riot and everything that he's going through. How is he going to balance that, you think, this season?
There is no balance. He's completely off kilter, on tilt, and you're going to see him exhibit some very questionable behavior, to say the least.
Do you think, how close to the line is he, do you think? How close is he to that ultimate breaking point? We saw him break a little bit last season, right towards the end there, but is he right there at the line of that breaking point, you think?
The breaking point looking like what?
That's the question.
The breaking point. Yeah. I mean, I'm interested to know what that looks like. And I don't know if he fully goes through it, but I don't know. It's tough. I mean, I think that the audience is really going to just have to judge it their own way. You know, there are definitely situations that he gets into this season that are really, really heightened and dangerous and questionable.
All I'm saying is, after the end of episode two, no spoilers, but after the end of episode two, I'm concerned. I'm very concerned. I was broken after that, man. I can only imagine what he's going through.
Yeah. Yeah. He's definitely doing whatever he can to not face what he's feeling, because he knows as soon as he does, it's over for him. So, you know, but also he's Irish, he's a McCluskey. So, yep. You know, it's a question of how much trauma can he bear, you know?
Apparently
they can hold a lot, right?
I was going to say, apparently they can handle it in spades. I mean, if you just look at the family in general, they can handle it in spades. It's funny. It leads me into my next question. I want to talk about family, of course, big part of the show. The relationship between Mike and Kyle, definitely a complicated one, but, you know, they're brothers. So how far do you think Kyle will go to help his brother, especially this season, because he's in the thick of it?
The thing that I love the most about these guys is that they have each other's backs no matter what. One can be off the rails and the other one will just back him up no matter what. You'll see in episode two, Mike makes somewhat of a questionable choice to bring a person to their house. I'm not going to spoil it. No, and Kyle tries to check him, but he still has his back. So that's what the thing I love most about the dynamic between these guys is that they know that they're all they got left, you know, with one brother down. They're going to have each other's backs no matter what.
It's funny because I feel like having each other's backs, but also they tell each other kind of what they need to hear in the moments too. We've seen that a couple of times in the show already. So Mike seems to have kind of an interesting relationship with Iris. I'm not sure how I would describe it really, but you know, he obviously wants to help her. We understand that, but how much do you think her presence just in general going to make things more dangerous, not just for Mike, but for the whole family, just her being around in general?
What's that saying? The two birds of a feather, what's that saying? You know that saying?
Flock together. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. They really, you know, the relationship between them and I'm saying this because I was actually thinking about it watching episode one the other night, or 201 the other night. They really seem to be, they understand each other in a world where nobody else understands them. Like they know each other like 100%. Like that's the feeling I was feeling between the two of them.
Moving on a little bit from that, I remember how stressful it was when I found out I was going to be a dad and going through the whole stress. Am I going to be a good parent and all of these things just in a normal everyday life? Now here you got Kyle dealing with, I'm going to be a dad. I've got a baby coming into the world and everything's just burning around him. So how much does that being a dad add to that pressure that would normally not necessarily, how much does that really enhance it more so than it would be otherwise?
Great question. And I remember what it was like getting that pressure, you know, of like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be a dad. I mean, it's crazy, right? It's crazy to know that you're going to be responsible for another human being and their safety. And especially what Kyle must be going through and what, you know, I've, you know, broken down for him is, how do you keep this this baby that's coming into a town, as you said, that's burning around you. How do you keep them safe when you can't even keep yourself safe? It adds immense pressure, which I think is, you know, the most interesting thing about Kyle is how he's choosing to deal with this. And really, when everything around you is crumbling and everything around you is a pressure, you really just have to deal with what's in front of you. And I think Kyle does a lot of that this season. There's not a lot of thinking about the consequences of his actions, but he's just trying his best, you know, going bird by bird, right? just hitting things one after the other, just one foot in front of the other.
I love that, bird by bird. That's a good way to put it, man. Very good way to put it. Before I let you go, I mean, you've had so many great scenes with this just incredibly talented cast that you've gotten, but is there anyone that you got to work with a little bit more this season and season two that you're looking forward to fans seeing?
I love this cast. This cast is just the most talented cast ever. And everybody's bringing their A game. And what I loved about this season is that relationships were formed with all the characters. You're going to be able to see all the characters kind of mesh together and meet each other and form their own relationships, which is very cool. And I thought was really, really well done and a great idea.
Really quickly, what's the future for this show? Do you feel like this is something that could run for multiple seasons? Because I just feel like no matter what happens at the end of this season, there's a ton of stories to tell.
Absolutely. One of the things Taylor shared and told me, you know, one of the first things he told me was, I've got six seasons in my head right now. I can do six seasons. Like, and personally, this show is just so, so dear to me. I love its grit, the rawness, the realness, and to be able to create in this world with the pedigree of people, the caliber of people that we get to create with and the stories that we get to tell. I mean, there's nothing better. I want it to run forever.
Well, hopefully it does that. New episodes of Mayor of Kingstown going to be airing every Sunday on Paramount Plus. Here's the six seasons and beyond, man. Taylor Handley, thank you so much, man, for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, James.
And I will tell you this, not only are you not ready for what Kyle's about to go through, starting with episode two. I mean, really starting this season, but really episode two really gives you another one of those moments where you go, oh, really? Like, he wasn't dealing with enough already? But just this entire second episode is a huge wow episode for me. So yeah, if you're not already streaming Mayor of Kingstown on Paramount Plus, make sure you're doing that. New episodes are dropping every Sunday, and you've still got time to catch up right now, not just on the first season, but on the first couple episodes of the second season as well. This whole thing's going to be bonkers, and I cannot wait for the ride that's about to come. Again, thanks for Taylor Handley for joining me to talk about Mayor of Kingstown. This week, up next, we're going to switch gears and head to Fox and talk about Alert Missing Persons Unit once again, but this time with Ryan Broussard. Get his thoughts next on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
Hi, this is Keiko Agena from Prodigal Son, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
Well, like I said in last week's show when I reviewed it, they don't just get their babies back. They got a mystery going on as well. Alert Missing Persons Unit, which you can watch every Monday night on Fox and again on Hulu next day. There's a lot of amazing stuff going on, and this guy is right in the center of it. He plays Mike. It's Ryan Broussard. Ryan, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
Doing great, man. So can you actually talk about really quickly what kind of drew you to the show? Because did you realize pretty quickly when you're reading the scripts that this isn't like your typical procedural type show?
Yeah, that's exactly what draws you to it. I mean, I think there's so much. It's such a character-driven piece, whereas in a lot of procedurals, it's just kind of case-to-case basis, and you're focused on that. But it really, this show gives you a real in-depth view of each one of these characters, you know, personal lives, professional lives. It really gives you a sense of who these people are, what their character is. So that's what immediately drew it to me. And then just even the character breakdown of Mike, I was like, I know exactly who this is. I mean, this is not going to take a ton of work. It's challenging, but at the same time, it's like I can buy into who this person is. He has a lot of the same values and morals that I have. So yeah, it was super easy to get into, and I was into the project as soon as I got it, you know, and I read the script.
And Mike was a character that I liked instantly too, so that certainly helps. He was one of the ones that just jumped right out at me. So after three episodes, man, I think that's safe to say that Mike's an extremely patient guy. Yeah. Everything that he's already been through with Nikki and the family since Keith's return, things like that. So we see the little glances he gives when Nikki and Jason are together. How difficult is this for him really right now?
Yeah, I mean, I've said it before where the part of Mike I like so much is that he has so much compassion and empathy for human beings. I think that's why he wants to be part of the MPU and help families, you know, get the people who are missing back and kind of not save the day or play superhero, but he wants to be part of that. And I think he wouldn't be a human being and he wouldn't have that empathy if he didn't understand that Jason and Nikki went through something extremely traumatic that will tie them together forever. So it's like, you want to be as supportive as you can, but at what point does, you know, kind of a human error kick in and that jealousy that, you know, we all experience as human beings kind of kick in? And as you said it perfectly, it's like, you know, you have to be patient and you want to give them the space to heal. And Keith is back in the picture. So you understand that kind of throws a kink in our relationship and what that means for us. But at the same time, it's hard, man. It's very, very hard. So like, that's the thing that I think Mike is a stronger person than me, Ryan is, because I don't know if I would have that much patience. So that's where the challenge, you know, lies in as an actor, is that like, yeah, you know, you have to really buy into how patient this guy is, how empathetic this guy is. But when does that jealousy start creeping in? And I think we see that as each episode goes on, if it gets more and more complicated.
And obviously, like, they're engaged now. So it seems like on the surface, it feels like they're on pretty solid footing, right? Because they're engaged. And we saw, of course, you know, their little hookup in episode 3 there, which was pretty great. So, but do you think at the same time, do you feel like he's kind of treading lightly? Because we saw what happened when he was questioning Keith and he was on Keith's case. So do you think he's kind of treading lightly with Nikki right now because of just how fragile everything is and how raw everything is?
Yeah. I mean, I think with Nikki, the professional and the personal are coming into the office where it's like, we have to get this information. If we want to find Keith's kidnapper, I have to grill him about this. I have to ask these questions that might be painful and might be traumatic for him to recall, but at the same time, it's necessary. And then you see Nikki wanting to protect him and being a mom, you know, so it's that it complicates our work. It's like, we're not able to do our job because it is so personal. And I mean, I'm taking it personally as well, because I was the person who was responsible for finding Keith when he initially went missing. That's how me and Nikki kind of formed a relationship. So it means a lot to me to find Keith's kidnapper as well. But it's also, you know, it's very, very hard when it's so personal for Nikki that she's trying to protect him at all costs. And it's not really helping our case and finding him any faster.
It's funny that you say that, because that kind of leads me to my next question. Does it kind of feel like, if you take a step back, does it seem like everybody's kind of too close to this? It's like, you know, like how doctors aren't supposed to operate on their own relative sort of thing. Kind of feel like everybody might be a little bit too close to this thing.
Yeah, that's why I think as an audience and the characters in the show want to believe that it's Keith so bad, you know, because there's so many questions of like, you know, I saw a lot of people saying like, just can we just do a DNA test on this kid already? And it's hard because every single one of us wants to believe that it's Keith, because, you know, 6 years have gone by. We're so invested in this that we kind of have the blinders on, where it's like it would just be as simple like, okay, let's do this DNA test and find out if it's really him. But it's at the same time, you want to protect him. You got to understand, how does that make him feel, you know, if every single person that's, you know, involved in his life doesn't believe that it's really
exactly
him? So it's like you're walking that line, and it's like, yeah, everybody's in it too deep. So it's like, we got to just kind of like let it play out. I think that's the fun of the show, is that we're going to, as an audience, we're going to all find out all this information as time goes by each episode.
And we saw a little bit of a tease of that actually in episode 3 with maybe there's a DNA test, maybe there isn't. But we've also seen little teases almost at the end of every episode. You got something's going on with Sydney. We don't know what's going on there. So what is going on with this family, man? I mean, are we just scratching the surface of what we're about to find out here?
I mean, there's so many things that just information that we find each episode that deals with Sydney and how she's involved with Keith and how Jason is, how I am, how Kimmy is, C. Like we're all kind of in this together, uncovering new information of how he went missing, why he went missing, you know, who took him. That like this is going to be something that unfolds throughout these 10 episodes, that you kind of have to just pay attention to every single scene, because there's little clues here and there. So it's like, if you go missing and you go to the kitchen and get something, it's like you might have missed a very, very huge plot point of unfolding this whole key thing. But then at the same time, you still have to understand that like we're working a case-to-case base with these other people who are missing. So it's like, it just gives the audience a lot to follow. I think with most procedurals, like I said, it just kind of gives you like a case and, you know, you just kind of like that's what it is. But you become so invested in these every single character's life and how this whole key thing is affecting them. And yeah, I think it just keeps you on the edge of your seat more than any other show that's out there.
No doubt about that. Talking to Ryan Broussard, of course, plays Mike on Alert, Missing Persons Unit from Fox. You can also watch it again next day on Hulu after you're watching it every Monday night. Now, Ryan, with everything that's going on, you mentioned this earlier, this team still has to do their job sort of thing. We still have these missing persons that pop up from week to week. So how incredible would you say is the writing in each of these episodes? Because these are some extremely detailed missing person stories.
Yeah. I mean, each one is unlike the other one that precedes it. Yeah. It keeps us on our toes because a lot of the times we're getting these episodes, like two episodes at a time. So we don't know, you know, when we're shooting episode 4 and 5, like we don't necessarily know what's going to happen in episode 6 or 7. As far as just the cases, not anything to do, like we're all, I think, anticipating the key thing, just like everybody else. But we are also excited about like, okay, what is this new case going to be where somebody goes missing and we have to find them? So like we're kind of like on the edge of our seats anticipating that. And yeah, the writing has always been good. They haven't let us down throughout this first season, where I think it's like super detailed. You know, it's not just kids going missing, it's adults going missing. Like we have to also understand that like in a missing persons unit are like, you know, Amber Alerts are like, we always think that it's like, it has to be a child. It's like, no, adults go missing too. Like people have loved ones, people have husbands, people have wives that go missing for, you know, months, years, you know? So it's, I think that's it, just having that variation just really, I think, allows the audience to understand are the people who are really out there doing this groundwork, which is our inspiration. You know, we get to portray these characters and kind of pay homage to them. But at the same time, like there are real heroes out there like doing this groundwork, and these characters are based off of them. So yeah, it's diverse. It's yeah, every single case is new and interesting. So the writing has been incredible for us.
That's one of the things I really love about the show too. So you hit the nail right on the head on that one. So let's talk about this team though for a second, because this is such a great group of characters, man. How much do you love this group and all of the different personalities that you've got going on in the room with Nikki and Kimmy and everybody? It's just such a fun group.
No, I mean, every single person is like I said, we mentioned diverse, and it's not just diverse in ethnicity or gender. Like it's diverse in personalities. And like each one of us brings such a, I think, a unique element to the characters. Scott is just so unbelievably effortlessly funny and witty. And like his dry sense of humor has been something that I've always been a humongous fan of, and Danya plays Nikki so fearlessly. And as we were actually talking about it yesterday in one of the interviews, about how the first day of production, we had that big stunt where she jumps off of the balcony into the pool. She actually wanted to do that. They had to talk her down. And I was like,
why am I not surprised?
Yeah, I was like, I don't understand. Like day one, we don't need you like jumping in a pool and dislocating your shoulder, and you're out for production for the rest of, you know, I was like, but she was dead serious about doing it. So she's such a fearless leader and intense. But she also brings this, you know, like, I think it's super important for her to bring that motherly, you know, like she is a mom of her two twins. And, you know, like she brings such a compassion to the role. And Adeola is like bringing Kimmy to life. I mean, like that's such a hard character to play, because it's like, who is this character? This character is somebody who's unbelievably bright, but then she's like also a shaman who like does these, you know, medical practices that are so out there that like, we all kind of just like over the years have bought into it, and we're all part of it now. Like that was one of my, I think my favorite interactions with the character was with her, because like throughout the season, not just me and Addie bonding as coworkers, but just also in the show, we found that ease in our relationship between Mike and Kimmy. And then see like everybody plays their part beautifully well. Like we had such a connection right off the bat. I think that chemistry bleeds off of on screen so well, because it's natural, it's organic. Like that's really how we feel about each other in real life, and it happens super quick.
It shows on screen too, man. It really, really does. And you guys will see it. Break out the sandalwood candles and the eggs, because every Monday night on Fox we've got Alert, Missing Persons Unit, that you can watch every Monday at 9 p.m. and again, by the way, on Hulu. So like Ryan said, if you feel like you might have missed something, you watch it again on Hulu and you go, oh, that was important, I'm glad I did that. So you'll find out a lot about what's going on in these upcoming episodes. Ryan Broussard, thank you so much, man, for the time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, man.
And I'm going to tell you right now, every time I watch a show like this, I'm a procedural guy anyway. I like procedural shows. But then you see a show like this that not only brings really detailed and fresh procedural cases to the show, but the ongoing story has all those, like Ryan said, little bits and pieces that you want to pay attention to, just looking for those subtleties to try and find out the mystery of, is this Keith? Is it not Keith? And the question we have left is that, where's the swerve? Where's the thing that's going to make you go, I thought I knew this, but in reality, this is what's happening? Because that's the one thing I'm waiting for coming up with this show. And who knows, we might just be getting it in the next couple of episodes. We'll have to wait and see. Make sure you're watching Alert Missing Persons Unit every Monday night on Fox and again on Hulu. Yeah, just to make sure you didn't miss anything. Because, you know, I have already. I had to watch a couple of episodes twice already. So make sure you're doing that as well. Thanks to Ryan Broussard for joining me to talk about Alert Missing Persons Unit. Up next, the interviews continue. We'll talk about YOLO Silver Destiny from Adult Swim. We'll get the cast and the creators of that show next. I'm James Witham, and this is the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
This is Chris Vance from Supergirl, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
Whether you want to be a gardener or an empress, they have something for you. YOLO Silver Destiny premieres on Adult Swim at midnight. That's Sunday, January the 22nd, and next day on HBO Max. And I get a chance to sit down with the show's creator, Michael Cusack, the voice of Rachel Todd Manojlovich, and the voice of Sarah herself, Sarah Bishop, to talk about this upcoming second season. Of course, this one named Silver Destiny. And boy, is this a crazy show. So let's get some inside info on this upcoming season and have a little bit of fun with them. Michael, Sarah, Toter, how's everybody doing?
Good. How's it going, James?
Very good, very good. So excited that YOLO Silver Destiny is back. It's been almost 2 years now. You guys got to be pretty excited too. So, I mean, what's it like to be back for everybody?
For me, it's really great. I was just happy enough we could get a season two for this because this is just we're just so lucky to make a show like this because a lot of it is just nonsense in a great way. Like it's the weird stuff that Todd and I thought was funny when we were growing up as kids, and it's very Aussie. So the fact we got that onto American TV is great too. It's just fantastic. It's just so much fun because we've got a small crew of friends we all love working together. And yeah, we're just so excited to be able to do more of this and have Adult Swim be so kind to let us do it.
What do you think, Todd? How do you feel about being back?
Oh, every time, whenever I get to do any work on YOLO, it's the best job that I can do. You know, I tried to get my hands on everything this season. You know, I did some of the audio and the music and, you know, the voices, a little bit of the writing. Yeah, it's honestly like, I could go forever. It's and that's the thing. It sort of has this reputation around the studio that we work in for being the one that everybody has the most fun on, just because everybody uses their instincts. And, you know, the feedback that we get is more character-based rather than technical-based. So it's always a real pleasure to to come back to it, you know?
Yeah, it's a dream job. It really is. I can't lie. It's just like a lot of fun. And it's cool coming back now because the show's actually been out in Australia, because when it first came out, I think, was it out in the US for like a year and a half before?
Yeah.
It only went on to a stand.
Wow, I didn't even know that it wasn't even on in Australia.
No,
they did billboards and everything. It was quite funny, actually. Wow. It's like they did billboards in Australia, and we couldn't watch. I thought it was hilarious. You know, that was a funny joke to start with. But yeah, we couldn't watch it until it came out on Stan. You know, yeah, I think a year and a half or 2 years later.
The joke inside the joke. I love
that.
Yeah,
exactly.
I love that. It's funny when I watch this show, even still in the second season. I look at Sarah and I look at Rachel and I go, how are they friends, but they're friends and it works. So like, I guess for Todd and Sarah, for you guys, why does this work so well between the two of them? Cause it just does in a weird way.
God knows, honestly. I think underneath a lot of, because it's always Rachel that's, you know, turning everything to crap, isn't it? You know, she's always the one that's trying to get away and trying to tell Sarah what to do and, you know, being horrible. But I think underneath, you know, she does that. There is a lot of love underneath. I think that's the thing that works in the end. There's always those relationships that you see in real life and you go, why are you friends with this toxic person? You know, oh, I see something in them. You know, there's something there under the surface that's, you know, that I stay attracted to, sort of thing. So I guess that's, yeah, it follows real life in that sense. You see a lot of people who you think might not work together and that, you know, it works out in the end regardless.
Yeah, I think for Sarah, like, for all Rachel's flaws, she's loyal and, you know, she's the first person that Sarah wants to call when something great happens to her. She's the first person that Sarah would call when she's in an emergency. And I didn't grow up in Wollongong. I grew up in a town called Townsville, which is about the same size as Wollongong. And sometimes those like regional cities in Australia can be a bit rough. So I think Sarah does like having a friend like Rachel. She feels safe with Rachel, I think, for sure.
Is it one of those things that like they need each other? Or maybe they balance each other out? Is that a little bit of a part of it, you think?
Yeah, a bit of a yin and yang going on. Absolutely. Yeah, I think we're polar opposites in a sense, but you know, that's, you need the yin and yang to make up the interface. So,
and I think, you know, something that bugs me sometimes with the odd couple dynamic is it's what comes to mind with a lot of people when they see it is, why would the good person hang around with the bad one? Why would they put up with them? And I think when it comes to Sarah is, I think it's two things. I think she's flawed as a character in a sense, in a way, in this world where she's so insecure that she feels like she doesn't really deserve anything better than a friend like Rachel. So she's kind of, she doesn't have that confidence to be like, I can do better in a way. But also Rachel stimulates her. I think that Rachel really, Sarah can see through Rachel's facade in a way and see that, you know, she does have an excitement for life in a way, and she's always up for adventures. And at the end of the day, that's better than someone that's, I guess, depressive and negative in a way, even though Rachel is negative, but she's more like she's definitely stimulates Sarah in a way that, you know, opens her up to new adventures. And that can be for the good or sometimes for the worse, but yeah.
She gets her out of the house.
Exactly.
Oh, no doubt. And she needs to get out of that house because she's got some of the creepiest parents I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah. The parents, they're some of our favorites too. They're just ridiculous. Just the boomer archetype is fun.
Giant boomers.
Yeah. No doubt. And giant, you say giant because in the first episode of season two, not trying to give anything away, but like there's a scene where, and it was brilliant, where Sarah walks into the house and her parents are like triple her size. And I'm like, because, you know, she's supposedly in trouble. I'm like, that's brilliant right there. I loved that scene.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from, really. There's just something funny about playing with perspective of characters. And your parents feel bigger than you. And even when you're an adult, they feel bigger than you. And it never really is going to change. Yeah, it just seemed to make sense. And them sitting on the couch, I feel like that's a parent thing. So,
no doubt. And you guys don't do that all the time either. That wasn't like a thing you guys do all the time. So that's another reason why I kind of thought it was interesting. But this show's always been a little nuts, and you guys have said that already, and that's why we love it. But did you feel like after season one, you're like, okay, now we got to turn it up a little bit, now we've got to do so, now we got to push it a little bit more? Or did you just kind of say, hey, what we're doing is already working, let's kind of stay the course here a little
bit? It was essentially a continuation of season one because we still felt like there were, you know, more stories and episodes for them to, adventures to go through. So But this one was a little bit different in contrast to season one, because this one we had a little bit of a light serialization going on, a bit more of an arc. You can tune in pretty much any episode, but, you know, if you, it's one of those things where if you watch the whole thing, you're rewarded for it a little bit more, because you can kind of have a little bit more of a story that goes through the whole thing. But yeah, the goal was just to up it, you know, in every aspect possible, make it stranger, funnier, you know, just better in terms of the writing and every way we could.
Yeah, it's a much bigger writer's room, a bigger crew this time, sorry, I should say. It's almost, I mean, I guess it'd almost be, what, five times the size of the first one, Cusack, something like that. There's a lot more
like that. It's
there's a lot more people involved this time. So it's sort of took it up a notch while keeping the soul, hopefully, of the first season, you know, because lots of people go, you know, once season one is done, oh, it'll never be like the first one. It'll never be not like the first one. But that's what we tried to capture, that to still keep the soul of the first series. And even the YouTube videos, which were just Cusack animating alone in his room, carry it on, you know.
Also, I'll just say one more thing to that. I'm so happy with season two. And I think one of the things that makes it so fun to work on is we're not phoning it in. It genuinely is like a passion to tell like another season. If we had nothing to say, or like just kind of like we're running out of ideas, we'd probably just say to Adult Swim, like, we can't do any more. So yeah, we had that kind of fire to do more in us.
Oh, it, that's very clear when you're watching these episodes too, no doubt. So this season, Lucas is back, still trying to convince Sarah that he's not creepy. That's tough to do when you're Lucas, but I mean, does he stand a chance? And Sarah, for you, I mean, I guess that's more for you than does he stand a chance? Is there even a possibility here? Because he's the guy's trying.
So hard to answer that. Look, I think, what can I say? I'm interested to see where both Sarah and Lucas's journeys continue to go as they evolve as people and start to figure out who they are. And yeah, that's all I can say.
She's trying so hard, so hard not to spoil anything. And I love that. So for you guys, I mean, we're going to meet some new characters this season, obviously. So who are some of your favorite new characters that we're going to meet and we're long gone this season?
My favorite that I can think of off the top of my head is a guy called the Bee Boss. without spoiling too much, there is a bee related episode. You know, they might end up at a beehive or something like that. Yeah, the Bee Boss is one of my favorite new characters that you get introduced to, because there's a reference in there too that we loved getting in, basically, when you get introduced to the Bee Boss. And I think it's really funny. I think it came off really well.
I think for me, there's a love interest for Sarah in episode four.
Yes. I'm so glad you said that.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite. I remember, like, when I, because I don't know anything about these scripts when they arrive. Like, I just get them and get this glorious joy of like sitting down with a cup of tea and reading through them. And when I read Ep 4, I was just deliriously happy with the choices that they made.
It's interesting too, because, and I was going to ask you guys about that actually, because the show to me is so visual at times. There's so many things going on visually in the show. So especially like for Todd and for you, Sarah, like when you get these episodes, do you have any idea like what the character designs are going to be like, what the settings are going to be like? Because I feel like not knowing that could be fun, but I also feel like knowing that could be like, really? Okay. this is pretty wild.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it starts off with me and Cusack in the studio just doing the voices. So we haven't even thumbed anything yet. So that's sort of where we don't have any visuals to go off when we're doing the voice recording at the beginning. But we do, you know, I do, maybe it's because I'm so close to Cusack and I know his style sort of thing. Like, I know that there's no holds barred. It's going to be as insane as it needs to be, basically, to, you know, take it to that next level. So whenever, if there's anything that we're ever doing in terms of our lines that we're going, how are we going to make this work visually? It's just the more insane, the better, basically. It's like, oh, no, we'll make it work by just, you know, going outside the box and doing something that's, you know, maybe technically beyond, and the kind of thing that a regular, you know, network would get back and go, no, you can't do that. But, you know, we just push the envelope. You know, we never get the feedback that's, no, don't do that. Don't do that technical thing. You know, anything that we do that's, you know, a little bit insane, that they will take. And they go, yeah, that's the kind of stuff that Adult Swim want, basically. That's why I love Adult Swim cartoons. You know?
Yeah, that's why I couldn't agree more with Todd. I just love Adult Swim so much for how accommodating they've been to us. Because sometimes, you know, the right character design for a specific character will be, you know, really detailed and like a good drawing. But sometimes, you know, it'll be just like a bad drawing, like a crappy, crap drawing. And not many TV shows and networks would be all right to allow that. But Adult Swim get that that elevates the humor and the style of the show. And, you know, that is a kind of comedy in its own way. So, yeah, it's I love that mix of crap and good.
I remember Cusack going into the studio and I looked at one of Nick Simpson's animatics and I went, how did that one get through? And that was because it was Nick just drawing, you know, a really crappy character in the background and passing it by you. And you said, yeah, that's exactly what we're using for the finished product. You know, it was just him, you know, scribbling really quickly. It's like, yeah, let's use that scribble. Like, that's a great character.
Yeah, it's just like, because it keeps it fun. It keeps it, you never
want. The fans love that. They really do.
Yeah, when you're working on a project, you never want it to become formulaic and like, all right, so now, like, you kind of want that fun to permeate through the production way, because the writing of a show never really stops until it's like done, like until like the finish of it, because you're still kind of coming up with strange ideas during the storyboarding and the animation. So, and that's with any animated show. We're not unique in that way, but it is just a great stage to keep adding creative and funny things.
I think the choice, and this is out there in the trailer, so this is not a spoiler. I love the fact that, you know, we go to the sausage sizzle, Sarah and Rachel both have these visions. They could not be more opposite visions. I thought that was so hilarious. So talk about when you guys were kind of coming up with that idea and Sarah jumping on this too, like, okay, so Sarah wants a garden and Rachel wants to be an empress. How do we even come up with that polar, like you couldn't be more polar opposite ideas. I thought that was really great.
Well, so I just thought, you know, when I think about the things I want, they can be really contrasting. So it's either like, sometimes it'll be, it depends on your mood, right? Like sometimes it's like, oh, I want to move to the middle of the country and just get a little shack and just retire and then, you know, have cups of tea and just chill out. But sometimes if you're in a different mood, it's like, I want to work hard and conquer and, you know, really, really make a name for myself and influence the world I live in. And those are two very different desires. So, you know, pushing those to the further side of the spectrum, it's like, you know, one is just doing something simple like a garden and the other is like ruling the universe essentially, or ruling like a planet, you know, like, so it just feels like, you know, they're the most opposite things. And that's what really will be kind of this division between Sarah and Rachel and test their friendship.
But it's interesting, Michael, how you kind of also flip that with Sarah's as well, because her one goal kind of slowly starts to.
Yeah.
It's almost exactly.
It's kind of, it's the irony of it. It's the what's that tail? What's the rabbit being faster than the mouse or whatever that's
tortoise in the hair. Tortoise in the hair. I got your back.
Yeah, tortoise in the hair. It's kind of like that thing. It's, you know, the irony of sometimes you get what, you know, that Rolling Stones thing. But you get what you didn't expect, I guess.
You don't always get what you want.
Who wants to sing it? Anybody want to sing it? Because somebody knows. Okay.
You don't always get what you want, but you become
get what you need. There you go.
You don't always get a garden. Yeah. Like it, and you know, that's interesting because Rachel really is, you know, jealous about how Sarah kind of got some. It's interesting when a friend gets something that you really, really wanted and they kind of didn't want that much. That's, you know, a fun thing to play with too.
I just wanted to know, does Sarah have an actual garden? Can she garden?
I don't.
Yeah.
It is actually like on my list of things that I want. And
really? Oh, so were you inspired by this or were you just like,
I didn't even connect the dots, to be honest, James. And then I thought about it the other day and I'm like, oh my God, I'm turning into the character. Like, I actually just want a garden and like, just want to chill out. It sounds great.
That's
but I don't want to post about it on Instagram. That's
no, don't do that. Don't be that person. Don't be that person at all. Okay. So I try and save the tough questions for the end. So here we go. Are you ready for this? All right. So yep. Vegan sausage, thumbs up or thumbs down? Let's do this.
I've never had one, but it sounds okay, I suppose.
Thumbs up. I had one. I've had one. It tasted good.
Really?
Yeah. I've had vegan cheese before, and that was probably the worst thing I've ever had. But vegan sausage, yeah, worked for me.
It depends on the brand.
Oh, so she's tried multiple then. So she's right in. So if we want a vegan sausage expert, we go to Sarah and try and find out, you know, what the best vegan sausage is. Have you tried the faking though? Like the fake bacon? Have we done that?
No.
Yeah. I've had that.
So you haven't tried the sausage, but you tried the bacon.
Yeah, I think that was on a burger or something. Like one of those like Beyond Burgers. Like I had some faking on that. It was all right. Yeah. It's mixed with everything else. So
I couldn't really tell the difference, to be honest.
Yeah.
Wow. See, because it looks scary as hell to me. I'm not sure I could do it. But no, but
have it like coated with other things like sauces and other bits and pieces around it. It tastes fine.
All I know is I was Rachel in that moment when I saw that episode, and it's like vegan sausage. Like, I'm out. See ya. Bye. this is not for me. So I also want to ask you guys, you said that the writer's room is a little bit bigger and you had a little bit of that. So how much did you all get to ad lib? Is this just kind of an ad libbing environment that you guys have had from the beginning? Because it just feels like there's some ad libs in there when I watch it.
Well, the ad libs are, I won't say the whole script, but sometimes it's the whole script. Sometimes it's like, you know, we have the lines and that's sort of more of a guide than what we actually read in the end, because each line kind of goes through a process of me and Cusack initially in the studio, just rinsing different types and coming up with new ideas and whatever is making us laugh on the night, whatever we've watched at the time or whatever is happening in our lives. We just, because we keep repeating things to each other. We're very, weird like that. We're always weird noises and whatever, and lines and things like that. So that stuff all comes out in the show, basically, wherever we can put it in. You reckon, Cusack?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like the improvised stuff is what keeps it fresh and fun. Like I was saying before, that's always what helps kind of keep the comedy rolling with it. And it's the funnest part for me to get in there and just, you know, see where we can take it. Unfortunately, more for Sarah's role though, because it's more a grounded character and we really want to, you know, she's someone we really want to relate to and have like this anchor as the show. There's probably not that much ad-libbing, Sarah, that no. I allow for her, that we
no.
do.
No, he doesn't let me.
Oh, so when he eventually he's going to take the chains off in like a third season, and you're just going to go crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Sarah becomes Rachel.
When Sarah becomes wild, that's when Sarah will do the most ad living.
Oh, I smell a body swap episode coming up in season three. But we'll have to see. We got to get to season two first, though. Yellow Silver Destiny going to premiere January 22nd at midnight on Adult Swim, next day too on HBO Max. Todd, Michael, Sarah, thank you guys so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks, James. Thanks for chatting with us. Thanks,
and trust me when I tell you, if you haven't seen any episodes of YOLO before, whether it be season one or coming up in this second season, Silver Destiny, this show is wacky in the most wonderful way. It's off the wall. It's crazy. You never really know what to expect, whether it be aliens or something else or just some random character around the corner. It's just one of those shows that's always going to keep you guessing, and that's one of the reasons that you need to check out YOLO Silver Destiny. Starting at midnight, January 22nd on Adult Swim. Make sure you're watching it again on HBO Max next day as well. Again, thanks to Michael, Todd, and Sarah for joining me to talk about YOLO Silver Destiny. Up next, going to get to the review. Speaking of HBO Max, talk about the first episode of The Last of Us, and we'll throw some spoilers in there. I'm James Witham, and this is the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is comic book writer Tom King, and you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
One of the most popular video games of the last 20 years has now finally hit the screen on HBO and HBO Max. That's right, The Last of Us has premiered, and I wanted to save my review of the premiere to be able to do this with spoilers. Now, I do also want to preface this by saying that I'd never played The Last of Us before I watched this, so I sort of purposely avoided, you know, getting into any spoiler territory before I saw the premiere. I knew the gist of the story. I was familiar with Joel and Ellie and some of the other characters, but wasn't really deep into what the story was about. I knew about the infected and things like that, so I knew the basics, but I didn't know any of the little details. And it was interesting as I went back, and I was, after I'd watched the first episode, and I kind of went back to compare the game to the episode, how many little moments here and there that were just pulled right from the game into the episode, not necessarily as a shot for shot, but almost like more of, like I said, a wink and a nod to those who love the games, like Joel holding Sarah. And again, a bunch of spoilers here. If you're not caught up on the show yet, or if you haven't watched the first episode, just be aware of that. But Joel holding Sarah right before she gets shot, that was basically ripped right from the game. And by the way, speaking of Sarah, can we just give some appreciation to Nico Parker and how incredible she was in that first episode. I mean, she not only just embodies the character so well, but at the same time, just her performance to me was off the charts. And she really did. I heard this somewhere. I think it was in the featurette after the episode where it was talking about the episode. She feels like a main character in the show, just in this one episode. Just an incredible body of work from her. And of course, the way that she and Pedro Pascal were just the partnership of Joel and Sarah, and the daddy vibes from Pedro Pascal were on full effect in this episode, not just with Sarah, but you see the kind of later on with Ellie, or you see at least the beginnings of that coming up. And just, you know, the brother relationship that he has with Tommy as well. I don't know that Pedro Pascal, he's just the ultimate family man on screen or something like that, but in more badass roles, it's interesting how it kind of works out that way. And it's also going to be the year of Pedro Pascal. I'll be talking about the Mandalorian trailer a little bit later on too. So yeah, it's going to be a very Pedro Pascal heavy show. But I will say this, within the first 10 minutes of this show, and if you know the story of the infected, then you know what's up. But as I'm getting that scientist that was talking, the doctor that was talking about, you know, the fungal infections and things like that, and how this is actually something can occur, Dr. Newman, that's his name, and there's nothing we can do about it. And I was like, yeah, right, okay. And then the more it was described, the more I looked into it, I was like, oh my God, this is not good. This is unacceptable. I can't even think about this. It's making me squirm. So, and then it's not even that, and I don't even want to call them zombies because I don't think I classify them as that, because if you listen to the show a lot, you know, I don't like the whole zombie thing. Can't stand it. Drives me nuts. And, you know, there's certainly zombie vibes to these infected, but I don't feel like it's totally zombie-esque to me. There's something more monster and creature-esque to it than zombie. There's certainly certain elements of it there, sure. But and their brains are taken over. I get that. But I don't know that I can flat out call them zombies. It just didn't feel like that to me. So either they're really not, or they just did such a good job of it that it didn't bother me. But and the variations thereof I thought were really cool too. That was very, you know, that's a very Resident Evil thing where you get the variations of those infected as well. You get the variations here in The Last of Us, and they do a spectacular job with that. And we'll only see that evolve as these episodes go forward. And then you find out about, you know, after the fact, you get the, you know, you fast forward the timeline, and, you know, Joel is more hardened now. He's with Tess, and they're trying to figure out a way to go save Tommy and find a way out for themselves as well. You meet the Fireflies and Marlene, and Merle Dandridge was wanted to play Marlene forever. If you saw an interview with her, she talked about this is a character that she wanted to play in the game. Now she gets to play the character in live action, which is incredible. And I thought, and I can't wait to get more from Merle Dandridge as Marlene, because the Fireflies thing is interesting to me. It's almost like the Rebel Alliance versus the Empire vibe in Star Wars, but on a much smaller scale, in that it feels like the Fireflies don't have a lot going on for themselves. And they realize that they're in trouble here, that their movement is not necessarily moving forward the way that they would like it to. And it's this whole world is a war zone just because of these infected. But is it more so the way people have reacted to the situation than the situation itself? And I think that's the commentary here that if you want to dig a little deeper into this mentally, you can look at is society's response to this outbreak just as bad as the outbreak itself, if not worse? And, you know, that's something you could, you know, certainly, you know, look at and just mirror true to life if you want to. If you want to go there, you certainly can go there. There's just a lot to piece together with this show. And then you get into the mystery of Ellie, when you find out more about her and that she's, again, spoilers, she's immune, it seems like, to this virus, and how and why and things like that. And we're just starting to figure out how that's going to go and where that's going to go. And, you know, Joel and Tess are tasked to bring her to the Fireflies in another one of their locations. And again, this is, you know, the basis of part of the game as well. And that's part of the journey. And we're not going to get into spoiler territories beyond this first episode, but the reaction that Anna Torv has, that Tess has when she finds out that Ellie is basically infected, but not. It was that visceral reaction that she has and the mood changing scene that was. I thought that was another brilliantly acted scene. And clearly this is a very, very talented cast. And there's just so many things that we get to look forward to in this show. But this is about as good a first episode as you can get. And I'm kind of happy that they went back and redid it. Usually it's not a thing that you want to do. Remember, we talked about that about a year ago now, I think maybe even more than that, about how they were reshooting this first episode. And you go, wow, that can't be good, right? Well, I guess it was, because they went ahead and they got it very, very right. And especially the casting of Bella Ramsey as Ellie. I mean, you want to talk about jumping right in. And if everybody's worried, she's still going to be the foul-mouthed Ellie that we know. Come on. Have you seen Bella Ramsey and other stuff? Of course she's going to be able to pull that off. So yeah, Ellie is very much that just loose cannon, foul-mouthed character that we know and love. Maybe loose cannon's not really a fair description, but she's got that wildness to her. Maybe that's a better way of putting it, that wildness to her that Bella Ramsey just jumps right into. I mean, I think that Bella did such a great job with this character in this episode. So even if you decided, like, if you're not even sure about The Last of Us, you're like, I'm just going to watch this because I like Pedro Pascal. I think you got really drawn in by this show and just how interesting it is on multiple levels. And this is only, and the world is only going to expand from here. And that's something I'm excited about for somebody that doesn't know the deep inner workings of the game story. I'm looking forward to the world expanding and finding out more about this world and some of the other people that we're going to meet outside these walls. And I'm very interested to watch those who do know the game talk about the differences and the similarities going forward. So I'll be looking through that on social media and other stuff too. But this is about as good of an adaptation, I think, as you're going to get. This is getting it right for a story that really belonged on the screen. And some argue that it didn't. It's like the video game did it so well. Do we need to see this brought onto the screen? And my argument was, well, for those people who haven't played the game that might think this is a good story, do that. And that's exactly what HBO and Warner and HBO Max have done here for me and countless others. And does this make me want to go back and play the game? Yeah, hell yeah. Now I just need to upgrade my ancient consoles at home so I can play the game. And then off we go. So yeah, The Last of Us, you can watch that every Sunday on HBO and HBO Max. I cannot wait to dive in more into this world and just see the amazing performances going forward. That's going to do it for my spoiler-filled review of The Last of Us premiere. Up next, let's talk about that Mandalorian trailer and some other nerd news, too, on the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is Vanessa Marshall, voice of Gamora on Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy and Hera on Star Wars Rebels on Disney XD. And you're listening to the Down and Nerdy Podcast.
This is the way to redemption. It's time for nerd news. I'm going to go through this really quickly. There's a few trailers I want to talk about, and that's kind of it this week. And how can I not start off with the season 3 trailer for The Mandalorian, which is going to be coming back to Disney Plus on March the 1st. And you see Din Djarin kind of on his way to redeeming his Mandalorian status after, you know, taking his helmet off and all those other things. And you sort of see him evolving as a character is kind of the best way I can think to put it, because, I mean, he hated droids, right? Maybe he still does. But you see that he has a droid in his ship now, and he was actually in a bar full of droids. So all that's very interesting, but it seems like he's going out of his way to try and help his people, help the Mandalorian people. So he's going to Mandalore. It seems like the best way that he could, like, redeem himself and get back in the good graces is to find another Beskar mine, right? So I'm wondering if that's one of the things that he's looking for, because they talk about, you know, being able to navigate the galaxy. It's not just about, you know, combat when you're a Mandalorian. It's also you got to know your way around the galaxy and things like that. So, and we see him going to a lot of different places in this trailer, seemingly anyway. That's kind of what's being teased here. So I'm wondering if that's what he's doing, if he's searching for another Beskar mine to kind of restore the Mandalorian people and, you know, bring them back to the status that they were before. And you see him in large groups of Mandalorians in this trailer as well. But then there's always the, you know, hey, something's coming. And by the time it gets your attention, it's going to be too late sort of thing, right? So now what is that thing that's going to be coming. Is it the rise of the First Order, maybe something like that? So that's something that we definitely need to keep an eye on in this upcoming season. And for some reason, and I don't know what it is, I don't know that I trust the armor. And maybe that's crazy of me. It's a gut feeling more than anything else. I don't know why I don't trust the armor, but for some reason, I kind of don't. It just seems like I can't put my finger on it. I have no inkling as to why I don't trust the armor, but for some reason, I've got my caution bulb lit when it comes to the armor for this upcoming season. And maybe nothing will go down. Maybe I'll be wrong. But at the same time, I'm concerned for Din, for Din Djarin. I want to make sure he's okay. And we get to see Grogu showing off a little bit of his Force abilities there in this trailer, which you saw that a little bit last season as well, and in Book of Boba Fett too. But like, it's very interesting now that they're reunited together, that he's kind of becoming, Grogu's becoming more of Din Djarin's like almost partner or sidekick or something like that, rather than just a youngling that he needs to protect, sort of thing. So, and it'll be interesting how the training maybe continues with Din at the helm now that, you know, Grogu's basically decided to be a Mandalorian instead of a Jedi, or has he? There's a lot of stuff that could be happening in this upcoming season of The Mandalorian. I'm just glad we're going to be getting it sooner than I thought. March the 1st on Disney Plus. I love the DC animated movie universe. I hope it stays exactly the way it is with Peter Safran and James Gunn taking charge of DC Studios and all the talk that's come out and things like that. I hope it doesn't mess up the DC animated movies, because there's another great one. Looks like it's coming. Batman: The Doom That Came to Gotham will be on 4K and Blu-ray combo pack, and of course digital HD. That's going to be happening on March the 28th. If it sounds familiar, yes, it is an adaptation of the Mike Mignola series, the comic book series that was out years and years ago. It's an adaptation of that, and it's a very Lovecraftian kind of vibe to it. There's supernatural forces that are kind of looking to wreck Gotham and burn it to the ground, as it says in the trailer. And you get to see a lot of it. You get to see different takes on some Batman characters. You get to see a very different take on Green Arrow, I can tell you that. You see a very cool and different character design for Ra's al Ghul, Mr. Freeze, and some others as well. There's a very like noir vibe to the Killer Croc in this trailer that I really dig as far as character design goes. And just, this is another Elseworlds story, and this is why I hope that these don't go away in the DC animated movie universe, because this is an Elseworlds story. It's, of course, takes place in a completely different timeline, and it's more of like, I think it's like 1920s, I think it is where this is kind of set to be in. So it's just so unique and cool, and this looks visually stunning. You look at the trailer, and there's not only just a lot going on action-wise, but the settings of this, and there's a scene where you've got Batman, and there's just like bats flying around him. It's a very simple scene in this trailer, but the way it was just beautifully shot, and I can only imagine what that's going to end up looking like in 4K on a bigger screen than the one on my laptop, so, or on your phone if you've seen the trailer. So Batman, The Doom That Came to Gotham, is going to be coming to 4K, Blu-ray combo pack, digital HD as well, on March the 28th. Of course, follow at DownAndNerdy757 on Twitter and Instagram to keep up with more information on that thing as we get closer. Finally, I wanted to talk about one more trailer, and that's for Superman and Lois Season 3, which is going to be premiering on March the 14th, Gotham Knights, same night, of course, and that's going to be on the CW. And the most surprising thing about this trailer was that Lois might be pregnant. Don't ask me how, don't ask me why. And, you know, we can unpack that a little bit later on in the season once we get closer to it. But the other problem is that she's gone missing in this trailer. And, of course, that just throws everything into just utter chaos. And we know that there's a new villain coming up for this season that's going to really, really test not just Clark, but this family as well. Especially, I mean, if Lois is missing, and it looks like Lois is in a bad way in this trailer. So, you know, definitely some worry about Lois. I don't think anything's really going to happen to Lois, not long term anyway, but there's reason to be concerned after seeing this trailer. We also get to see the first look at the new Jonathan Kent in this trailer, Michael Bishop taking over that role, and it just seems like these two brothers, it seems to match up a little bit better, visually anyway, and we get very, very brief dialogue from the two of them. But, you know, Jonathan's going to be on his journey post-football in this season. We've got Jordan, who's, you know, coming into his, he's coming to his powers now, and now he has to, you know, sort of deal with the whole superhero identity thing and trying, you know, keep those powers secret from as many people as possible. So there's a lot at play here, and you see Clark at one point said to the boys, we're going to get through this as a family. Now, does that mean something that's going on with Lois? Does that have something to do with the new villain? Is it the struggle between the brothers who may be going in different directions here? We'll figure that out in this upcoming season, but there's, again, a lot of storylines at play here in Superman and Lois, as there always is, and there's even more than that if you read the description for the season. There's a heck of a lot more to unpack there, so it's going to be a very interesting third season of Superman and Lois. Hopefully not its last, by the way, but it'll premiere on March the 15th. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the Down and Nerdy Podcast. Again, thanks so much to my amazing guests for joining me this week. Like I said, follow along on social media at Down and Nerdy 757 on Twitter and Instagram, at Down and Nerdy on Facebook, at Down and Nerdy Pod on TikTok. Having a lot of fun doing some new TikTok videos on there. Some stuff that's very unique that you're only going to find on social media. All this also can be found at downandnerdypodcast.com. Make sure you're also subscribing to the podcast wherever you get your podcast. You can also listen online at realm.fm too, by the way, since we are a Realm partner. You can listen to us on there as well. But one thing you remember, no matter what you do, never have to apologize for being a nerd. So let your fan flag fly and be good to your fellow nerds.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of supernatural horror, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side path?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.